Couple of quick plugs before we start today's show. If you want to follow us on Twitter, our handle is @NarbosPodcast. If you want to email us, our email address is narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments on future episodes of Degrassi Junior High and Degrassi High. And if you want to be on a future episode, let us know as well, and we'll try to set something up. You can also follow our show on all of the podcast platforms, including iTunes, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and Spotify. So please give us a follow and subscribe on any of those sites, and you will be able to get us pushed to you every single week. The theme music for this show is brought to you by a band called Ew, You're a Girl and Girls Suck. They are a punk band from here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And their Bandcamp page is iagags.bandcamp.com. That's iagags.bandcamp.com. They used to watch Degrassi episodes when they took breaks from recording back in the 90s. Anyways, that's about it for the plugs. Let's get to this week's episode.
Hello, boogity boogity. This is a scary episode. Also, I'm saying it's a scary episode because I really didn't think about what to say until Alan started counting down. But I saw the word ghost, so I'm going to go with that. So, ooh, scary. Hold on to your seats. It's almost a Halloween. Oh, no, it's not actually. This episode is not scary. It's about drugs, and there's a band on it on the second part. Well, on the first part, too. And it reminds me of the time, a better time when Anthrax were on Married with Children. And that was much better. So anyways, so then I started thinking about that. Hello, I'm Ted, everybody. So welcome to the show. And you're in for a doozy this week. Let's go around the board. Let's go up to the Bone Zone, which is where?
I don't know. God. What?
Please don't call it the Bone Zone. No.
Pile of Bones, Bone Zone. Yeah. That's what the kids call it.
Hi, everybody. It's Arlo coming to you from Pile of Bones, otherwise known as Regina, Saskatchewan. And happy to be here. I guess we've got a lot of intros to get through today, so maybe we'll just move straight on and I cut my inane chatter. Let's see who's in Toronto.
Usually ghosts that wear bedsheets are white. You know what else is white? As the French would say, la cocaïne. So
cocaïne.
We're going to talk about, spoiler alert, cocaine. Can't wait. I'm in Canada's cocaine capital. I don't even know if that's true.
What's that alliteration?
I'm in Toronto, everybody. Hi, it's Alan. And just down the road from me, in the crack capital of Oakville, who's there?
I'm sorry. We are a very affluent city. We are should be the cocaine capital, but you're right. We will take the ugly stepchild and be the crack sister.
Yeah.
Jim here. It was your mayor who was smoking crack, Alan.
That's true.
So,
in my face.
Yeah,
we had a crack mirror before I lived here. So me on crack.
Ergo, Alan on crack.
Yep.
Correct.
All right, Tim here. Let's throw that baseball and see if the Yankees can hit it because the Jays sure can't. Stacy.
Oh no.
Hello, it's Stacy down in New York, and God, these episodes were a chore, weren't they?
What are you talking about?
I loved these episodes. So. Can't wait to talk about them.
All my notes say, I must say Jesus Christ at least 15 times.
Thank you, Lord, for bringing
in my notes.
This show.
Yeah, no, and not in that way. No, more like hashtag Jesus Christ, what the fuck is happening right now? It's going to be fun.
Oh, I guess should we, what do you think? Should we jump in? Jump into this butte?
Yeah, let's just go for it. Fuck it.
Okay, let's go.
Oh, you know what? No, let's not go for it yet and not fuck it, because before I forget, I want to read an email from our old pal Jilly Mack in PEI.
Yeah, Jilly Mack.
A number of episodes ago, we talked about if somebody was a mascot.
Yep.
Jill McKinnon wrote and said, I just listened to Can't Hardly Wait, and Courtney was wondering if anyone was a mascot. I was the mascot at the 2023 Canada Games. And I actually, and I actually think I missed my calling in life. Sure, I could have volunteered to be on the medical crew because she's in nursing. But why be on the medical crew when you can be a mascot? It was hot as balls, and you get mauled by kids, and you can hide your non-verbals. Not being able to talk was probably the hardest part. Highly recommend, and I will. I've got the photos to prove it. So,
oh wow!
So yes, there you please. Go, everybody. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you, Jill. Awesome.
Mascots represent.
Yeah. Now let's go to this. Now let's go to this great, amazing episode.
Let's go to what it feels like to be a ghost. And I was going to say what it feels like to feel up a ghost, or possibly what it feels like to be a ghost, or feels how it feels to be a ghost, all these iterations, anyways, to make my own entertainment. But I didn't need it because I enjoyed this show. Spoiler alert. So this aired in Canada January 2nd, 2007, right after New Year's. What a treat for the new year. And in the United States of America, January 5th, a couple days later, also 2007, directed by Eleanor Lindo, I believe.
Yes.
And so we jump right in. Oh, get ready for witty banter. It's coming up.
Can we just talk for a minute? What's It Feel Like to Be a Ghost is a song by Taking Back Sunday. So that's what this episode is named after.
Pop punk. My favorite. Yeah. Is pop punk? Yeah. Is this pop punk?
It is.
Yeah.
I love it.
And I mean, it was done because the band is in the episode. So they just probably shouted them out. A song that I don't know much about, but I'm sure is like vastly inferior to Walking with a Ghost by Tegan and Sarah, which rules.
Yes, please. So,
Tegan and Sarah rule.
Yeah.
Well, apparently it was supposed, the original title of it was Shake the Disease by Depeche Mode is the song. And then I guess because Taking Back Sunday was going to be on the episode, they changed it to a Taking Back Sunday song. And I was reading, I was actually listening to interview with Adam Lazara, who's the lead singer guy. And he was talking about how he and his friend, roommate or someone who's associated with the band, I'm not sure, who's actually in this episode, named Angel. And they were sitting around and they used to watch Degrassi and, you know, sit around and watch Degrassi and that kind of thing. And they, when the Kevin Smith episodes came on, they were like, whoa, Kevin Smith's on Degrassi. And Angel said to Adam Lazara, he was like, dude, you should totally like see if your manager can get you on Degrassi. And so Adam Lazara was like, okay. So he like called his manager, and his manager like called Degrassi and was like, hey, like, just so you know, if there's ever like an opportunity where you like need a band or something like that, you know, they'd love to do it. And it fucking worked. They like manifested it. It happened.
Good
so
for
wait
them.
A minute. After watching the Kevin Smith episodes, their first thought was, please put me on that show.
I want to be on this show. Yeah.
After those episodes? Okay.
Uh-huh. The director's like, strokes, yeah, are you busy tomorrow? Like, come in. Like, nobody asks us that. Come on. We have a slot open for you.
Yeah, I always found it funny that you know, I knew the connection, so I knew why these episodes were not named after an 80s song. Like most of the other episodes up until season 10 were all 80s music titles, except for the first season. You know, they use like Jagged Little Pill and Mother and Daughter Reunion or whatever the hell it was. Mother, it should be Mother's Son. But yeah, because I don't know. I feel like I'm too old for the pop punk stuff. I don't even know who. I know Taking Back Sunday is from Long Island. That's all I know about them.
Ooh.
They're from my neck of the woods.
Yeah.
Well, they've had some lineup changes over the years. Mm-hmm. Originally from Long Island, but some of their, you know, the lineup changes or whatnot are band members from other places as well. Like my husband was friends with one of the band members at one point, who's no longer in the band. But that's all I know.
And they played a show, or like, you know, they showed up at a backyard party in Long Island a couple of weeks ago and performed on someone's back deck.
Yeah, aww. I saw them still together.
Yeah, and it made the news. Nice. Everyone was like, oh my God, could you imagine going to a party and them being like, it's Taking Back Sunday, and they're just playing on a deck.
I in terms of my musical landscape, they're not really on my radar at all. But I guess if you're into that genre, like if you're into punk or pop punk or emo or were into that at that time, like my husband loves them. So.
Oh, I was going to ask.
Yeah, I was going to say they sound all kind of like all that same music sounds kind of the same to me.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
It's not like every other band I heard like that in the early 2000s.
All I can think when I think of this band or any band like this, I think like the Wayne and Garth song, like Take Him Back Sunday. That's all. Like, good song, I guess. Great. Good job, guys. Yeah, now should we jump in? What do you think?
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Ooh, okay. So we open at the airport and now we got to save it for Peter. We can't do it for Craig. So here's Craig. Hurrah. So Manny comes to greet him and some witty banter ensues and between the two, and they pretend not to know each other. It's funny. So I laughed a lot. They are still a boyfriend and girlfriend, even though he is bad at keeping contact. So Manny says they haven't seen each other in months and he hardly ever calls. It's like, Manny, that's not your boyfriend. just a heads up.
Strange. It's a strange greeting. You know, yes. As somebody who had a long distance relationship for over a year, like when you see them at the airport, like this is very strange. Listen,
Craig's got a new girlfriend. We all know.
Yeah. Also, fun fact, that is not the airport that they're in.
I was going to say that.
Tim, do you know where that is?
You know what? I would have said the Metro Convention Center.
It is. So when you are leaving Union Station and you're walking through the walkway. Union Station, the train station in downtown Toronto, and you're walking through the walkway to get to Blue Jays games. Is the path that you go through that passes through the convention center
and out to
Blue Jays games. So that's where they really are.
I'm glad you said something, Alan, because if you didn't, I was going to, and people were going to think, you're American, how do you know this? It's because I noticed this dumb shit on this show, and I knew that wasn't an airport, and I had to look it up.
Yeah.
And so.
They have the sound of airplanes.
Yes. An announcement.
I mean, they weren't that far from Billy Bishop Airport. Why couldn't they just do it there?
Well, technically right behind them where they're meeting is where the Up Express, the train that goes directly from the airport to Union Station, exits. But that's as close to the airport as they get. Yes.
Why? Because that looks way nicer than if they were at the airport.
Yeah.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah.
So they say something about they're going to head to Marco and Ellie's because they've organized a homecoming party or something. And jump over to heavy quotes party.
Yeah, I was gonna say
it was a definite rager.
Oh, good lord! Spinner, Marco, Dylan, Ellie, and Drake are sitting around listening to Craig play acoustic guitar, and they think it's great. And we, the viewers, know it's not.
play another one. Like,
where'd you learn this one?
Good lord!
Oh my god.
Well,
these people have never been to a party with an acoustic guitar. I guess.
I was just thinking the same thing.
Well, and also, like, even if it, like, I had two thoughts. Number one, it's like, it's their friend, so they've already heard a lot of his shit. Like, it's not like it's brand new. Like, it might be new songs to them, but it's not like brand new Craig, right?
Right.
But the second part was, I was like, if somebody like if Peter Gabriel, my favorite artist of all time, was like, I want to sit in your living room and play acoustic guitar, I still don't think I could last for 15 minutes.
Pete, like, it's good and all, but you know.
Yeah.
Just you want to see what's on TV?
I'd be like, that sounds like a boring version of Salisbury Hill. Like, thanks though.
Well, it's like this was the sound that was going to make him into a superstar.
Yeah.
Yes.
Also, before he plays a song, he specifically mentions that he wrote one of his songs when he was on a ferry to Vancouver Island. And it reminds me, last summer, I saw Burton Cummings and Randy Bachman. They, for some reason, not calling themselves the Guess Who, but they performed together. And Burton Cummings tells stories before every fucking song. And
nice.
And usually it's about how he's like, this song's still a hit and I still hear it on the radio. And I just imagine Burton Cummings sitting by his radio all day, like waiting for his songs to play.
But, and just ticking it off on his book in his book.
Yeah. But one of his songs, he was like, we wrote this while we were waiting for a ferry to Vancouver Island. And so I had a flashback
Oh my god, that's so funny.
Also in said concert, if you're familiar with the tune Stand Tall, which you may not be.
Stand Tall.
Yes, you are. So
yes,
Burton Cummings song that has kind of like a 1.5 minute buildup, like a very quiet part with the piano before it goes into this like kind of epically sung chorus. And Burton Cummings alone on stage playing the piano played the lead up to the chorus and then just stopped and went on to the next song before everybody was ready to sing it. And he's like, well, next song. So an amazing show, everybody. Anyways, continue.
But not as amazing as this show that Craig's giving to his friends
at this party.
Oh, and of course,
they are loving it.
For the first of like many times, like Ellie is so douchey.
Oh. Yeah. Oh my god. Oh my, what did they do to her? And she gets worse. Like, you think she's bad in this opening scene where she's just so, it's so obvious how she feels about Craig. Like, it's, she's not hiding it in any way, shape, or form.
She has little hearts for pupils.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Episode. Basically, like the cartoons where the heart eyes shoot Aruga. Out of Aruga. Yeah, exactly. Like that. Just.
Stacey, I don't think you get it because she says, I love the allusions to Melville.
And oh, like, my God. Oh,
you're that's so what, well read.
That's one of my notes. It says, Ellie mentions allusions to Melville. And the next line is, Christ, Ellie.
Well, again, this is where a show like this fails on really depicting what kids are like in university.
I love it.
This whole thing, I warned you guys, but I this whole thing, it's just, did any of you go to university or a college? What is happening here?
I guess to be sure there is a subsect of people who go to college who believe themselves to be the most sophisticated people on the face of the planet. Until they get a little older.
Yeah, but they're not invited to parties.
I'd say a step further.
But this is an exclusive acoustic show.
Well,
they haven't met a child before, which is amazing, writing a whole show around it.
What awesome. One other thing to note is that this episode required 3 writers and 1 person to do the teleplay. So 4 people got together and murdered Ellie before our eyes. So
and it was written by like the OGs, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like she was she was completely murdered in season 6. Season 5, she was kind of teetering, you know?
Yeah.
Like the last blip on an EKG before someone dies. And season 6, she just takes a fucking nosedive. And I don't know if Stacey Farber did something to piss these people off to make Ellie this horrible, but oh my God. It's unbelievable what they did to her.
I'm sure this isn't true, but I read somewhere in some sort of trivia about this episode was that this was the last time we see Ellie without Marco beside her side. I'm sure that's not true, but like if that's what even someone thinks, that's how bad she's gotten. Like it's like she's just a sidekick.
It's like when Dusty Rhodes was given the yellow polka dot gimmick and he had to sell it.
Sapphire.
Which was a terrible gimmick for a legendary wrestler.
That was the only gimmick I knew him for.
Yeah, me too. So Manny's not happy, and this is probably they are dating, so they should spend time together. She points at her watch, and the gang calls for another one because he's so good. And it's such like a Jack Johnson ripoff.
100%. That's what I wrote down.
Okay, Craig. Settle your ass down, friend. So we have the opening. Bum, bum, bum. Outside the school, Craig rolls up to Manny apologizing that they were supposed to rehearse lines last night and he bailed.
Also, why is he there? You're home for like you're home on a break. Why are you at Degrassi? You're not like a student anymore. Why would you want to hang out at the school? That's another.
All the cool kids hung out at high school, who left high school, came back to
high school. All of them, yeah, come back and hang out there.
Don't they?
Yeah, you're a hot rock star. Come back to your high school girlfriend. So my impression was that Craig came back specifically because he had booked a gig, not particularly that he had come back to see Manny or his friends or whatnot. Am I wrong in that, or did he come back to help Joey, or like what?
I don't remember. He's never mentioned anything about a gig that I remember. Did he?
He does have a gig.
He plays a gig.
I would imagine
he gets invited on stage.
No, he has his own gig too.
He has his own gig too. Yeah.
In this episode. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that I would imagine that, you know, they booked a gig for him and he's like, you know, I'm from Toronto, and they're like, well, you know, go there for 4 days or something, right? Like, especially if he's got a place to stay, the fucking record company is like, great, like, you and your acoustic guitar can stay at Joey's for free, and we don't have to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. So we find out that Craig is good at more than just music, and he grabs to Manny's script and starts helping her with the lines. Also, lines foreshadowing. Ooh, boogity, boogity. Craig, so Easter eggs all over the place. So Craig helpfully mansplains to her to not doubt her instincts. And he just thinks she's the best because Craig is good at guitar and acting. And she takes this like, yeah, she thinks this is good. Manny goes to leave, but when he wants to go with her, saying he only has sound check today, so they're going to grab a cab across town, which Craig can somehow afford.
Yeah, he's rich now.
Right. He's making the big bucks as a musician.
Dollar bills.
I also like when he meets up with her and they're kind of bickering a little bit, and she's like, I'm really busy, like, I got to run these lines. So then they run one line, and then she's like, gotta go.
Time for you.
Yeah. Yep.
So Liberty is at her locker as JT and Mia talk about the baby being sick and getting sent home from daycare. So now there's a baby in the school. Ugh, gross. She has an assignment.
A sick baby.
Yeah.
Nice. Thanks for bringing it. Yeah, because everybody knows how non-vector-like little children are. So,
I mean, if she's allowed to bring her baby in the school, then I should be allowed to bring my dog to the school.
Linda Park's off. She's like, I would go to school.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's weird. Like, she's strolling this baby around like, no biggie. Ugh. She has an assignment that's passed into Quan. And JT comes up with a plan to take care of the kid this morning because he has a spare period.
Can I note one more thing?
yes, please.
So the whole point of this stuff is that JT's going to get it in his head that Degrassi needs a daycare. Right, because she's in trouble. But I'm, yes. but
her,
right,
her daycare is too far away and won't take the kid when the kid's sick.
But that's the other thing, right? Would it matter if the daycare was at Degrassi? The kid is sick; they got sent home. Like that's why she's fucked. It's not because the daycare is not at Degrassi. It would be more convenient if it was there. But that kid, they're like, we need a daycare at Degrassi that just has sickly children all the time. That would solve your problem.
We need a hospital here. Pediatric hospital.
Yeah.
It's just as believable.
Well, and Liberty has her stank face on, as per usual.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, she's awful in this episode.
I mean, she has been for the past several episodes. Just absolute stank face every time we see her on screen, which is a shame because she's so beautiful.
I mean, I agree that she's got the stank face, but like, I love how every conversation that JT has with his love interest is like right in front of her. Like, oh, right, yeah, in her face all the time.
Immediately in front of her face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just, yeah, it's like, all your role is this season is to look at JT and his love interest and look sad. That's your job. So
that's it.
Yeah.
Here's your paycheck.
What, does something happen to JT later that she's going to feel bad then?
Well, just enjoy your time with JT while it lasts, everyone.
Mm-hmm. Enjoy yourself.
Oh, boy.
So he says he'll take care of that sick baby, and he tells her to go bend it like Beckett. So hold for uproarious laughter. JT asks her for a date to the dot tonight. And he says bye to the kid, whose facial expression reveals she is well aware how terrible this show is. The kid goes, ooh.
And he says, bend it like Beckett, which, you know, A, is wrong. So I guess that's the humor of it. But secondly, why would he?
It's because she has a Waiting for Godot presentation.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
And Beckett is the playwright.
Yeah. Oh.
So it's actually.
Oh, smart. Damn. So he's smarter than I am. Got it now. Yeah. So JT. Yeah.
It's the opposite of what Spinner does. He's like, actually,
Arlo, I'm the Spinner in the situation.
You must read Russo by the sounds of it.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Very good.
Uh-huh.
So good. Oh, spoiler. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm.
I was sent a book on tour.
You imagine getting a mail on tour and opening a big old goddamn philosophy book. You're like, for fuck's sakes, like, send me something better. Like, send me like cookies or something. I don't know.
Do you send someone something while they're on the road? They're not. They have no fixed address.
You put to it Craig. In a package. Yeah, to Craig on tour.
Rockstar.
Yeah. Rockstar. Canada.
So we're at Ellie and Marco's apartment, and Craig and Manny bust in, and he's all over it. He's all about it. She's going to be an acting legend because she just nailed her audition. So all thanks to Wonderwall himself, Craig. Good job, bud.
And then Ellie... her usual obnoxious. God, she's such an asshole in this episode. Saying, like, you know, Craig is all excited for Manny in this audition, and instead of being like silent or just looking over and not saying anything, she's like, "Oh, if you like Ernest T. melodramas filled with woefully bad writing," and I'm like, "Are we being meta here? Are the four writers who wrote this episode being really meta?" Because. And then Marco makes his joke about Saved by the Bell, because they did have a Saved by the Bell marathon, right? I'm not imagining.
He reminds her of Saved by the Bell, and then they take a break from their studying to go watch more of it. So
yeah,
that's what they do together. Sounds like fun.
Yeah, really fun. But she's such an asshole. Like, you don't have to like Manny. You can be jealous of Manny and Craig. But, like, don't shit on her. She's auditioning for a fucking TV show. Like, try and be, you know, if you don't want to be nice about it, just shut up. Don't say anything.
Write
an article about it in the core.
I mean, I hate it that the way that Ellie is, but I will say this, like, there is payoff coming. So there is payoff coming. So, yeah. In this episode, I believe. It's either this. Yeah, it is this episode. Just you wait. No, wait. Maybe it's the next one. Anyways, we'll see.
Pins and needles here.
Yeah. All right. Anyways.
What's happening? Ooh.
Yeah.
I've only seen the next episode. No, so Manny and Craig are talking about buzzes. What was that?
Buzzes and the high of performing.
Mm-hmm. And then they smooch.
That's why she's his girl, because she likes buzz.
Yeah, Craig.
Okay, good.
Craig's like, you just want to take that buzz and snort it up your nose.
I'm so fucked up. What's the matter? What's happening? Nothing. I'm good. You're the greatest actress of all time. So we're at the dot, and Mia enters. Liberty's there to compliment her, saying that she looks real good. And she asks where she put the baby. She said it's at home with her mother.
I left it at home. Yeah.
Yeah. Poor Isabella.
Uh-huh. Sorry, baby. Mia thinks Liberty seems a bit tense, and Liberty breaks the news to her that she already had a baby and that JT stole drugs to support them. Yeah, he almost killed himself, by the way, but whatevs.
So he didn't tell you. Oh, there's my coffee. Gotta go. Bye.
Okay, so Liberty's worse than Ellie in this instance.
Yes. Yes.
Oh,
that is so messed up. That's just so bad. Oh my god. Oh, you didn't know about all this? He didn't tell you any of this? Oh,
he
okay.
Almost OD'd down the ravine.
Like he almost died. Yeah, it's great.
And Liberty drops the typical.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Nice, everybody. Mia's upset and leaves, and Liberty is pretty content with herself. Uh-huh. She's like, I did good. Well, I'm not sad anymore.
You would think that Toby would be like, Liberty, what the fuck? Like, instead jellyfish. He says, ouch. That's what he says.
Meow.
Actually, I'm surprised Toby didn't do meow. That feels like something he would do.
Yeah, it does.
Kitten's got claws. Yeah. Women be just so emotional.
Like, doesn't it seem Toby would be the kind of guy who, if he was talking about his friend being whipped, he'd make the whip sound, and if he was watching a cat fight between girls, he would either meow or just be like, rawr. Like, that seems like...
Talk about, like, the writers hating a character. Poor Toby.
He's not even in the intro. Like, he's just there.
Well, you know,
he's not either.
You know, the other thing is, like, these writers and the female characters in this show. So there's a big knock on Vince Russo, who is, if you don't know, is like the shittiest writer in professional wrestling history. And one of his tropes is that the women in the shows are always to each other be like, you slut, you bitch, like... That's
which is
just,
basically what this show does.
Which in his head is like, that's how you think like women are and how they treat each other. And sometimes I look at these writers and all the girls are catty and conniving little bitches and just
backstabbing.
Yeah, like backstabbing. And there's like even the kind ones go into these moments where they're just like abnormally cruel. And and it's just like, where did this come from? Like Liberty was never like this in the first few episodes, right? Like she was a dork and now she's all of a sudden like the most evil bitch in the world, and it's like, how did this happen? Darcy is the same, of course Ellie, like they had Ashley being shitty to Terry was, they're like, Terry's the only one who's kind in this universe, let's kill her off, she doesn't fit. So
R.I.P. Like I said before, like there's no kindness in this show. It's hard to watch because it's just everybody is cruel to some level or sniveling or like there's nobody good on this show. The original, of course, we're comparing it to. But you could see yourself in that. But these storylines are just like storylines for shock and for like, ooh, this is a topic. It's like, yeah, okay. No, it's not. It's has nothing to do. As Morrissey said, it has nothing to be about my life. So there you go.
And with what
shout out Boz.
And with what
not
they're doing,
his politics, but
yes, of course. With what they're doing to JT in this episode, I'm not surprised. Ryan Cooley must have just been like, "Look, can you just kill me off? Like seriously? Like,
I think I've had enough."
Yeah, seriously.
I've had enough. Get me off this goddamn show.
Yes. So JT shows up at Mia's house. He's all concerned, and she's mad at him because he didn't tell her he owned part of a baby and the rest of the stuff. JT, local genius, figures out, he's like, Liberty talked to you. He's like, yeah, you think so? Good job. You figured that all by yourself, JT.
So I think the timeline here is like, it's a little messed up for us, I think, because like the last time that we saw JT and Mia, like they were just sort of starting to maybe flirt and maybe be interested in going on a date with each other kind of thing. And now here we're talking about hot dates at the Dot. And she's like, oh, well, you should have talked to me about this several weeks ago. So I think in our minds, no time has passed, but time has actually past, like they've presumably been dating for several weeks now, I guess, because like you know, like, oh, by the way, you know, I used to sell drugs and I tried to commit suicide and also I gave a baby up for adoption last year. It's not really like like first date, you know, information that you'd necessarily be been sharing with
maybe it was
somebody
a way the
that
show
you're
was
getting
trying
to
say,
know
sorry maybe it was a way the show was trying to say how crazy it's been, like, don't you remember we had a baby, I gave it up. JT tried to do drugs by stealing them, and then he almost OD'd. Oh, wait a minute. This show is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Also,
but yeah, I noticed that she said you should have talked to me about this several weeks ago, and I was like, okay, so I think in the show's mind, like, a lot more time has passed with these two than in our mind.
And when did we see them last? What episode was it?
Where he was doing the audition for the children's show, wasn't it?
And he got hit with an orange pie. And then she was like, oh, let's go out for Cheetos. Get it, orange? And he was like, being weird about it. And then, like, that's kind of where we left that. Like, and then he, like, apologized. And they kind of established that they liked each other. But that was about it.
Well, Liberty looked on.
Yeah.
Also, I can't. There are other examples that I can't think of off the top of my head. But it's happened before and it's happening here where there's like this siloed information in Degrassi where it's like, actually it would have happened like, I think with Darcy and Spinner, where like Darcy wasn't aware that Spinner like dated Manny and, you know, like they could have had sex or whatever. And in this case, it's like only JT or only Liberty would know what happened with them and would have told Mia. Like Liberty was pregnant at school. JT OD'd and like Jay and all the kids at the Ravine knew. And Mia, like no one has told her about that. Oh, you're with JT. He had a pretty fucked up year last year. Did you know that?
Right.
Yeah.
The
but
thing
no.
nobody notices in a high school is a pregnant 15-year-old. It's like, no, I don't see it. Nobody sees it. I mean, of course. Yeah, she's going around humongous. It's like, It's like, yeah, we get it.
Yeah.
Everybody's talking about it. Everybody knows it. Sorry, teen moms. We see you. And we recognize you. And we respect you.
Jesus.
I'm assuming Nina Dobrev's acting got better by the time she got on Vampire Diaries, because Mia's like one of the worst characters in these seasons. I can't take it. She's just so bad. And she doesn't really get better by the time she leaves. So I really hope she improves. I love her now. She's really funny on TikTok with Shaun White, and she's really endearing in interviews. But my God, she was bad on this show.
Oh, so terrible.
She has one mode, concerned.
Yeah, she's It's basically like the overacting, flailing the arms, kind of breathing heavy thing that young actors do, and they didn't stop her from doing it. And it's just like kind of tiresome watching her. No offense, Nina Dobrev. I love you now.
You good now?
Yeah. It's like, it was my first acting job.
I know. I feel bad.
You're so mean.
Maybe we're the bullies. Maybe that's the whole purpose of this show. hold up a mirror to us.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
We're the bad guys.
That's exactly it.
So she tells him that he's the problem, not Liberty. We're at the bar, and Manny and Emma and Sean's arms enter.
There it is. There's the one appearance of his biceps in one.
Yeah, there you go, buddy. Look at them guns. You gotta register those things and register them separately. Two different licenses. Manny's marking out over Craig and his talent, and Sean asks why the turnaround from a few days ago, and Manny explains magic. She says a bunch of other stuff, but she mainly says magic. It's like, okay, right on, Manny. Ellie's at the bar as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, with her boyfriend while she's...
her dad friend, her uncle friend.
The guy who looks like her uncle, who she's supposedly dating.
Uncle Jesse.
Mooning over the other guy.
Uncle Jesse is there. Yeah, so.
Hey, I got the night off. My ex-wife... that witch, she got the kids, so I'm allowed to go to the bar, get my drink on.
Hey.
Okay, Uncle Jesse.
This is also very much a bar. Like, you can see the taps behind their heads and, like, the actual bar. And, like, Emma and Manny are here. No problems.
Mm-hmm. No, it's all good.
Right. Yeah, it's perfectly fine that they're not 18 yet, but they're in a bar, and it's sure, cool.
Not 19 yet.
Okay, even if they could sneak in... Ellie says, so Ellie's at the bar, but Manny then says, not even, nothing can bring me down. Not even smelly McSnooty pants. Says that about Ellie. And I'm sure, and the bouncer should come over and go, get the fuck out, kid.
Also, she says this in front of Sean. We get no reaction from Sean at all. They don't even show him when she says that, because the writers are hell-bent on making everyone forget that Sean and Ellie were ever in a relationship. They never in any scenes together. Like, what?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, and like, you know, Ashley and Craig were never in a serious relationship. She's just there with Jimmy. Like, yeah. It's all, like, Manny and Spinner never dated. Like, it's just, yeah, it's all very, it's the Degrassi sex web, for sure.
So incestuous.
Yeah.
So Manny goes backstage, and old Craig's doing the scoops. He's hitting some lines. And Manny's totally shocked, and Craig is completely oblivious and heads to the stage, leaving all his drug paraphernalia on the backstage table. Like,
oh, my God. Like, first of all, the bouncer is taking that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, up his nose.
Yes. Right.
And going, not here. Like,
Yeah. You can't just leave your drugs lying around, man.
No.
I mean, on top of all that, like, you paid money for that. Like,
yeah.
That's
like a lot.
Yeah.
Like,
that's a lot of cocaine. Money.
That was so much cocaine. That's a lot of cocaine.
That's a lot of money.
Good Lord.
Cocaine.
Yeah. I mean, I guess if he's, like, making the dollar bills, he doesn't care.
No, but they don't they can't do anything subtle, right? It's not like... You know, some people have, like, the little thing around their neck, the little vial, and they open it up and they snort it off their finger or something like that. Like, Craig has to take, like to dump out a pound of coke onto a mirror, meticulously make 20 lines of it, because you have to know.
It's not on a mirror the size of the witch in Snow White, a giant mirror of cocaine.
Yeah. Yeah, it just has to be so obvious that that's what he's doing. Yeah.
It's going everywhere. It's going on the floor. Like, whatever.
He has cocaine residue on his t-shirt. Who cares? Yeah. I'm going out on stage. Who gives a fuck?
He puts it all over his face and he's like, just like a ghost. It's what it feels like.
I'm a ghost.
You're like to be a ghost.
Yeah.
So Craig's on stage playing his jams, and Emma notices something is wrong with Manny, and Manny goes to move closer to the stage. Spinner is sitting in the crowd loving this music. Like, he's like, I love that man and his music.
Okay, so
equally.
We used the shot of all of them
staring at Craig, where like no one looks at like they're having any fun at all watching this man sing. I had that as my Twitter banner for like 3 months. Because it just looks like they're all being tortured by Craig Manning singing. It's so funny.
I'm looking at a poster right now. There was a festival here in Toronto like 5 years ago called the Night Owl Festival. Four nights, all like psychedelic and garage rock bands, many of whom I love. My favorite artist, one of my favorite garage rock artists is Ty Segall from Los Angeles, who you should all check out. But on the poster, it says Ty Segall, and he plays with a full band, but in the poster, Ty Segall, and then in brackets, solo, and my heart sinks. Like, I'm just like, and like an acoustic set? Fuck no. And like, Craig's song is fine, but I'm not buying it. Like, it's a coffeehouse performance. It sucks. But then on top of all that, just to make us all even more angry, his song ends and they go to Ellie, who makes a face that's just, her face is all like, oh, wow, that Craig, like another
she
banger.
Just ovulated
she just, here, yeah, she just makes this face and I want to fucking punch my TV.
That happened to me a few years ago. We drove up to Saskatoon and it was a mother show, but the real draw for me was that Said the Whale was opening for them, and I love Said the Whale, and I haven't been able to see them live yet. And so we bought these tickets. We're like, okay, yeah, mother, yeah, that's great too, but I really wanted to see Said the Whale. And we went up there, and there ended up being like a snow event, a blizzard, and we got to the show and they were just like, well, Said the Whale couldn't make it because of the weather, so we have a local musician, here is Matt the Musician or whatever, and this guy comes out with a fucking acoustic guitar, and I was like, are you fucking kidding
me? Fuck you, Matt.
And, like, obviously, like, the show organizers did the best that they could with, like, what happened, like, with the weather event. But I was so, so disappointed.
This music is exactly this. Like, what you would hear on campus at some bar on an open mic night.
Yeah.
Right.
I've noted that this stuff is played in 1,000 bars in Canada in any given night of the day of the week. And America, tens of thousands of bars, the same stuff. It's not special. None of it's special.
If you went to the Spoke at the University of Western Ontario, you're probably hearing it right now.
So in my notes, I talk about how everyone looks like they were dragged there to listen to him. I said, except Ellie, of course, who's still with Jesse at this point, and she's so openly going gaga over Craig in front of him. Like, what are you doing, Eleanor? And my next note is, of course, Spinner is into Craig's music because he's a dumbass.
Yes. Spinner's just happy. He's like, I know that guy. Ellie's also like guilty. I mean, like, I'm sure younger version of Alan did this and I hate myself for it. But it's where you have to like put yourself over as being like, I'm just so into what I'm seeing. Like, this is for me, and I get this, and I want everyone around me to know it. And I hate it so much.
Like, they both truly believe there were those allusions to Melville.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spinner's like, that guy looks like Craig, my friend. Also, something unreal with this, like, everyone is listening at the same time. Like, there's nobody getting drinks, there's nobody going to the bathroom, like walking through the crowd. It's just everyone is staring at Craig. Absolutely. Like, he's the best thing ever. And so Manny goes to storm off. Also, there's like 5 storm offs in this one episode. So he says he could see her eyes shining the whole time.
Wait. You skipped over the whole drowning allegories thing from Ellie.
Oh, yeah. Can you lay that on us, please?
Oh my God. So she's the first one who approaches Craig, because of course she is. Like, she can't even let Manny go up to Craig to congratulate him first. And she talks about is that why you asked me about drowning allegories? And he's like, oh my God, you noticed. I knew you would notice. And then she talked about the melancholy key. And I was just like, oh my God. Like I said in the other episode, I just want to fucking put a screwdriver through my temple.
Sometimes why I hate musicians. No offense.
You just want a honky tonk man him. Or Ellie, like right over the, or El Kabong.
When honky tonk man tried to break the guitar over Macho Man's head and it didn't actually break and he actually hurt him.
Oh, Jake the Snake.
Oh, he fucked Jake the Snake up too.
That's what you'd call a non-gimmick guitar.
Yeah.
Jake the Snake would say that's why he started taking cocaine.
Probably.
Yes. See, it all ties back to
the circle of life.
But oh God, I was just like, like, no wonder why Manny wanted to like just be like, all right, I'm leaving because this is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Because she storms off, and then he stops her, Craig does, and says he could see her eyes shining the whole time he played, which probably means that literally, because he's on the goofball.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's eyes were shining while he was looking.
Oh, fuck, everyone's shining. That dog's eyes are shining. Freaking me out, man. I'm so high right now.
I've never done cocaine. It was big in my high school, though, because I went to high school with a bunch of rich kids. And wow. Cocaine really like scared the crap out of me. I know some friends who got really deep in it, and I don't know what it's like to be on cocaine, but I feel like, I don't know if they were overacting or what, but it just didn't seem right to me.
I don't know. I don't. Cocaine was definitely not on my radar when I was in high school. Fuck.
No, it was bad. I had a friend at 15 get hooked on it. 15.
Wow. Yeah.
Like really bad. Yeah. Cause, We went to school we were blue collar kids, and we went to school with kids of doctors and lawyers and kids who were getting like big cars on their, like literally on their 16th birthday before they could even drive a car. They were getting BMWs and Mercedes. And these kids were afford. Yes, they were all Peters, and they could afford cocaine. It was. Yeah.
I'm sorry. Was your name Brenda Walsh? And did you go to Beverly High?
My whole town was Brenda Walsh compared to, yeah, and they were basically 90210. Yeah.
They like to party in the East Village on the weekend.
Yeah.
Oh, doesn't everybody?
Yeah, yeah.
I have heard that cocaine is more effective on men than it is on women.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I've read an article to that effect or whatever, and in my experience, that seems to be correct. Like, I know a lot of men who are just like that one is my vice. Like, that's the one I love. Like, not that they're going to do it all the time, but like, if they had a drug of choice that they were going to get at a party or something like that, it would be that one. And it's very infrequent that it would be a woman that says that. So for whatever reason, the chemistry or whatnot, it seems like it affects men a lot more strongly or differently than it does women.
Yeah, because my friend who got hooked on it was a girl, by the way.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's not, I mean, it could still be an enjoyable drug for women. I'm just saying, like, yeah. In my experience with people that I know, it seems that men are, like, really into it.
Yeah.
And like, women are like, it's okay. Like, it's good, but it's not.
That's usually how it's portrayed in movies, right? Because a lot of times you see guys snorting the stuff. Like, occasionally you see women doing it, but, like, whenever you see a scene at a shady party and you see a guy, it's usually a guy off in the corner doing cocaine off a mirror. So that's interesting. Huh?
Or in your favorite scene in Crocodile Dundee.
Oh my God. Yes.
Which I sent you as a GIF.
Yep.
Head over the bowl. Cause Crocodile Dundee said, oh, that's the way you get it in you. And puts it in a bowl with like, I think hot water, and puts the guy's head over the bowl.
He
and
he has a cold. Yeah.
He said, oh, that'll clean you right out. Yep.
So good.
Also, you said about banging rail. I don't. What would I do? Go down in downtown St. John's and be like, hello, fellow citizen. May I bang rail off you, please?
Where might I find some cocaine?
Cocaine.
Okay, so I'm not going to say that I have done cocaine, but
I think you're going to, though.
If I had, would I be the only one on this podcast you had?
The most I've ever done is accidentally smoked pot that was laced with something really bad.
to where I was hallucinating.
I was always afraid of acid. I was always afraid of shrooms. So pot was like the most that I did. I was more of a drinker. I drank a lot and I had to stop. So that was my vice. Yeah.
You know me, Arlo. So no.
Yeah, you know me too. Not saying anything.
Oh, okay. Right.
No,
right.
No, I'm kidding. Or am I? Outside the school, Mia's still mad at JT, who is trying to apologize. JT figures he has the solution, a daycare at the Grassy.
Fuck.
He figures this is as realistic. So it's a great idea, everybody.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's a great idea.
It is. But. I'm saying it's a great idea. It's a great idea. No buts. No. It's she figures this is realistic as her being Lindsay Lohan, which is a perfect reference and it aged perfectly.
I like
that's awesome.
I like how JT's plan for opening the daycare is I'm going to do it. So
and I'm going to ask the student council president if it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, the girl I got pregnant.
Who no longer needs a daycare.
Yeah.
And Mia says, it's not about you sucking up to me, right? And he assures her it's about doing the right thing. She smiles and walks away. And Ted says, Mia's also a stupid. So she doesn't. You go, okay, great. A lot of intelligence. Manny and Emma in the halls. And Emma proclaims, oh, get your barf bags ready, y'all. The pout is officially out of fashion. So speak. Somebody wrote that. A writer, a paid writer wrote that.
Four writers.
Four of them.
Four writers four got writers. Together. Four were like...
So four people like put their hands in the center and said, agreed.
The original That's... voices of this show wrote yeah. this.
Yeah.
Gross. Manny says she didn't get picked for West Drive, which I believe is the name of the fake show.
Yes.
They talk about Craig and what's up with him. Emma hasn't noticed anything but that he's more sure of himself, which Manny says, that's the problem. And Ted says, there's also a problem. This is, not to get too technical, but this is an impressive failure of the Bechdel test, which is a measure of the representation of women in film and other forms of fiction. To pass, the work must feature at least two women who speak to each other about something other than a man.
And so, they talk about two of them in this instance.
Yeah, so failure, pretty much forever for the show. Emma counsels her to say that you take the guy, you take the flaws.
That's actually a theme song to show. You take the guy, you take the flaws. He runs over somebody, then you got the Sean Cameron.
Natalie. Yeah. And Joe, too.
Yeah.
And Blair, the stuck-up one.
Yeah.
Mrs. Garrett, oh. So get them barf bags ready again. And so Emma makes a reference. She says, referencing what she just said, she says, see Cameron, comma Sean. Like, Manny should have turned to her again. Like I said a number of episodes ago, she should have turned to go, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you talking so strange? Like, just say, like my boyfriend, like Sean.
She needs to turn to her and say, man, your mom does not pay me enough for this.
Ugh. I need an up in this economy. I need bonuses. Okay. So Emma says, true love is worth fighting for. And they walk off stupid together. So Craig's at Ellie's apartment writing a song, sitting on some extremely nice, expensive leather furniture. I had to let this scene play out to go, is he in like a mansion or like a real fancy like plastic surgeon's office? Like the leather upholstery is fantastic. And this is like their hovel of a apartment.
Well, oh, so it's
well, fucking beautiful Victorian Toronto house.
Yeah,
the house.
It's Marco and Ellie's and Dylan's place, right? But
yes,
they treat it like it's just like an open hall at the university. Like, Craig is just in there by himself writing. Like, later he's going to say, I think in the next episode, he talks about he's going to Joey's. So he could have stayed there, but he's in this house, just open season. Manny, who one of the owners of this home doesn't even like her, opens the fucking door and walks in. No knock, no nothing. It's just, we just all roam around this place openly. And we've seen that with all these kids.
And in university, I lived in a lot of apartments in university. It doesn't work like this. You know what people who don't like each other do? They stay in separate rooms. It's like they go up to the boyfriend's room or girlfriend's room and they stay there and they exit as quick as they can. They come in as quick as they can and they try not to cross paths. It's not this like really openly disliking each other and just like me, me, meow, 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 meow. Like just this snippy, snip, snip bullshit. So Manny rolls in and needs to say some stuff. She asks him why he does it, waving her hand in front of her face. Well, actually, it was under her nose. It wasn't in front of her face like John Cena style. He says that he needs a little boost of confidence sometimes. And he says he's only done it twice, which is actually classic, like, person on drugs.
It's just like, lies.
Well, not only did he have his little fucking cocaine kit, like, complete with razor blade that he carries around with him. But also,
like, twice.
Well, he came from Vancouver. So, like, unless he, like, brought that cocaine with him up his butt, like, he has some kind of connections in Toronto for this stuff or whatever. Mm. Like, he made the effort to either get it here or buy it here.
And it's amazing that he'd know a place already, considering he wasn't doing it when he left.
Presumably his, like, record company people. I guess. Good set him up with it? I don't know.
Yeah. He's breaking the law for drug buying, and also he wears his sunglasses inside sometimes. Oh, look at that, man. Bad. That's bad behavior. So he kisses Manny, and they move on to talking about her losing the part in the show. Craig invites her to a dinner party tonight, and ex machina, Manny is now a big dummy, everybody. Like, just like that, Manny's a stupid. She wasn't. But she is now. So they explain it. I'll just say this part, and then we can kind of tear at it like wild dogs on a piece of raw meat. So, and I'll tell you when we're done. She says, not like Ellie, like smart. He comforts her, and he disagrees, and he says, she is smart, just not book smart. He's like, who cares? Because she is brilliant in any other way except that way, as in smart way. I'm saying that, like, but that's essentially what he's saying.
You're smart in every way except for the literal smart. Definition of smart.
Except the dictionary definition of the smart way.
The thing is,
of smart.
It's not just that he said it, which I wrote in all caps because I could not believe that he said it. It's that she absolutely no-sells it. Like, Manny hears this from him, and she's like, that makes sense, and that's such a nice thing to say. That's like,
sweet.
What?
Oh, sweet of you.
Yes.
I love you.
She does. She no-sells it, and she, like, so Manny snuggles in and, quote, jokes, with also a question mark after that for my nose, that she is so comforted right now, but I think she kind of is.
Yeah.
And he says he is crazy about her. So that is all the comfort she should need. And scene.
No, I think she was being sarcastic there. That's why he was like, oh, well, I'm all the comfort you need. Oh, God.
Which was 100% serious when he's like, you don't need a life. I kind of care for you. I don't call for you. I don't actually act like you're my girlfriend. I don't show you, like, affection only when, like, I don't know, once in a while. But, you know, that's all you need with your life. So you good. Stupid. Amazing. I mean, love it. Okay. We're at school council. And JT proposes a Degrassi daycare, so they're sitting in, like, the library or whatever. Liberty calls it foolish and ill-conceived and shuts it down. She says they're not equipped for it, like lack of a playground and child height counters, which until about 5 minutes before we started recording, I realized child height counters meant countertops. I thought it meant some type of apparatus that measures children.
like a ruler.
Preschool classes with the sinks are lower and everything. That's what she means.
Like where I
just discovered that.
Yeah, when you go to someone's place who has kids and they have like the measurements of how tall they are on the wall over time, and you're like, oh, that's a childlike counter. Child height counter. Pardon me. Yeah, that's it.
You better measure that kid. It's very It's like, here, we come in. We have we have lots of good daycare people, and we have lovely facilities, and also this thing over here, which counts the height of your kid. And they're like, oh, you had me at kid counselor height thing. Good job, Ted. JT tags in for Toby to stand up for him, but Liberty gives him the look and shuts it down. He's like, jellyfish. He goes, I'm not even in the credits anymore. We go, yeah, okay. So JT goes up to the podium to argue with Liberty, and also, again, no teachers around.
Yeah, where are the people? Wouldn't there be a teacher at least supervising this?
Not a single.
We're still asking this question.
Yeah.
Linda Schuyler was a teacher. That's why she started Degrassi Junior High. Why couldn't they carry this over into the next generation?
Well, not only a lack of teachers. Okay, so let's just buy that there's no fucking teachers at this thing because we've seen it over and over again. All these other kids that are in the room, not a single one of them is going to tell on them or like say something. They're just like, another student council meeting. This is normal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where we make decisions on building daycares in a school.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what the stakes are that they're debating in this meeting. Like, I think you got him mixed up with city council, everybody. Which, which also is not effective at those kinds of things usually. So,
was anyone in student council here?
Nope.
Okay, I wasn't either. I didn't know how these meetings went. I didn't know that many people would show up to them.
Yeah, I think I was, but we had like one meeting, but that was it. You're just like, okay, all good.
I was quoted in the university newspaper at the University of Winnipeg after their first student council election where I was part of the student body, and I said, there was nothing but backstabbing and stupid issues. I don't give a damn who won. That was my quote about student council in the paper. So, yeah.
Slipping the D in.
Yeah, quoted. So, there you go.
Yes. So when JT sees that, when he says that, he says our community can benefit from this, and she says, yeah, your girlfriend, and JT goes, yeah, and so snippy, 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 way to go, JT. She brings up a good point, said even if they did do it, it wouldn't be open for at least 2 years. They argue back and forth. He calls her a robot, and Mia stands up and says that of all people should know, you should know it could help
you.
So that's like, fuck, like,
okay, so you said Liberty made a good point, right? Like, you were like, Liberty made a good point where she said even if they open it, it will be gone by the time it's open. But she didn't. Liberty's good point would have been like, we're fucking children, like, that's
she kind of did say that.
Yeah, like what are you
fucking idiot?
What, like, yeah, what are you talking about? Like, this is not like in the realm of possibility.
Here, let me go sit on my gold throne and think about it.
Yeah,
Liberty's got like the phone numbers for like all the contractors and the tenures.
She's like, I've already got it out for quotes. Don't worry.
I mean, look,
we got our quotes for the children height counters.
Now that I think about it, she's probably like, you know, Drake and Spinner could probably run it. Like, they just opened a fucking store, so why not have them do it?
So, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the world they live in. Oh, and Liberty storms out as well. Another storming.
And all those other kids sitting there watching this are probably sitting there going, this is really uncomfortable. I can't even believe I'm sitting. It's bad enough I'm at a student council meeting, but now I got to watch these two idiots fight over a daycare that can't be built.
Mm-hmm. And he just like rushed the podium. That's fine. Go ahead. He's getting up in her face and getting aggressive.
That is not decorum during a meeting. Like, I don't care if it's a student council meeting. You're not supposed to storm the podium like that. That's so stupid. What are you doing?
When did Mia get on the council? She got a baby. Go home. You got other stuff
to do. You're so concerned with your child. Go home and be with her.
No extracurriculars for you.
Yeah. Don't have fun.
You can't have fun. It's like an open forum situation or something. Right?
I think so.
Yeah. It's
like
just
a battle royale.
And it's funny and convenient. I don't know. It's just like, oh, well, the only reason I'm here is because he's suggesting a daycare and I'm going to back him up.
Mm-hmm.
Or a stupid daycare idea.
So before you get into the next scene, Ted, I just want to say that for the rest of this episode between this point in time and the commercial break, I went through such a swing of emotions, like such an unbelievable like swing of emotions to the point where I should be mad about all this, but I have to applaud because they took me on a roller coaster here.
Yeah. This next scene is what you would call the piece de resistance, and it is something. So everybody get ready. We are about to open on, well, we'll welcome everyone to the most pretentious teen dinner party ever. So we got
Dylan. It's the most pretentious scene on this show up to this point. Yeah.
We got Craig. We got Ellie. We got Dylan and Marco all around the table with okay, I'm going to explain some shit on the table. These are first year collegians. There is a glass water jug filled of water. There's a basket of bread with a cloth, a nice cloth underneath it. There's a bottle of wine being passed around. There's all plated food. And it's like, and what are they discussing? They're discussing the choice of man. And I put blah, 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 blah. Like I couldn't write what they were saying because it was so stupid.
What, you don't read Rousseau?
Oh, you don't read. It's that for the next 3 minutes.
I mean, I wrote.
My note says in all caps. The dinner party opens with them talking about Rousseau, Jesus, tap dancing Christ, all in capital letters.
I wrote talking about Rousseau and philosophy and fucking bullshit. That's what.
Yeah, I mean, yes. I think we've all met insufferable people in our lives, right? Like this. You know, shut up, myself included, probably. But like I'm sure we've all met insufferable people who actually think that they're the smartest person in the room, and then they all get together, and this is what happens.
Also, their dinner that you just described, so they had passed it, was rigatoni. Literally, the night that I watched this, before I watched this episode and had totally forgotten about this dinner party, I made a pasta meal with rigatoni. Now... Sarah, my fiance, is like a really good cook. I'm like, boil some pasta, throw some sauce on it, maybe like stir up some vegetables and throw it all together. Uh-huh. So I was actually feeling like, well, you know, I made an edible dinner, but, you know, kind of like a shitty meal compared to what we would normally have. Then I saw the dinner party and felt better.
It's like they just have like this huge platter in the middle of the table, and it's just like got rigatoni with like sauce ladled on top.
Family style.
I mean, I'm not against family style, but you didn't have a bowl. Like, why is that on a plate? It's on a tray. Yeah. It's bizarre.
They're trying to remind us that these are university students, and they probably don't have the proper cookware. But then again,
I guess so.
What's that
bread doing in that basket? Okay,
they're talking about Rousseau. And then Marco is like, oh, and some other stuff that we talked about in our intro to psych class. Okay, intro to psych is like...
His pretension is ridiculous.
It's intro to psych. It's like the lowest of the low fucking McDonald's classes.
They're learning vocabulary.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a fucking... Like, it's not even a class. It's a fucking seminar because they stuff... 500 kids in the class, and I took intro to psych, and I was like, oh, the purpose of this class is to weed a whole bunch of people out from continuing with psychology. Like,
exactly.
Yeah, people like Manny who were like, I saw a movie once.
Yeah. So there's that, and they, of course, are trying to embarrass, like Ellie specifically goes out of her way to embarrass Manny in this conversation. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote, I want to burn the house down. Like, I want it to
lock
burn
the doors first.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think they were illustrating the whole book smart, not book smart thing where Manny, her thing is acting in movies. So that's where she gets her references from instead of the pretentious references from books that they're reading in university.
Yeah.
Right,
but you know where first year university students get their information from? Movies and TV shows they watch.
I know.
They're smart overnight. They're halfway through a first year course and they're like, I'm a genius.
Also, fucking Uncle Jesse is there, right? So,
yes.
let's ignore the fact that he's a 30-year-old divorced man. Let's actually pretend like he's a legitimate 22-year-old. he would be like, fuck these kids. Like, he's already been through this. Why would he participate in this bullshit?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even Dylan, because Dylan's a couple of years older than them.
Yeah, they're effectively smarter than this group. They should see this. You guys are idiots.
Yeah, like they've been through it, and they may have been pretentious little assholes too, but that you very quickly are like, oh fuck, like I was a douche.
This is what we sounded like, and they should have high fived.
Yeah.
Also, another bad thing, they're talking with their mouthfuls. I was expecting them next. This scene was getting so bad to start talking, doing baby talk, because I was like, you might as well throw it on top for old Teddy here.
Did you ever read a big Wusso book? Woo-wee doody.
No. We good. So they throw it over to Ellie, throws it over to Manny to put her on the spot and say, oh, Manny, you studied Russo? Because she had previously given a half-hearted, yeah, so true, like while looking down at her plate. She says, not exactly, but don't worry. She's not exactly, but don't worry, as Craig is coming to mansplain rescue. And he jumps in and says, oh, it's okay. He's a big 18th century thinker. Ellie sent me one of the books when I was on the road. So he's basically like, don't fret. It gives you wrinkles, honey. And also, it's taken as like fine.
Yeah. Also, like, don't.
He's the hero.
Don't forget also now here, because it's going to be important in about 2 minutes. That clearly Ellie has made the choice to call Manny out in front of everybody.
Yeah, 100%.
Right? To start this next sequence of events, Ellie is the bitch so far.
Correct.
Just don't forget.
It is important.
Yeah.
So Marco sees all this tension and he changes the topic over to psychology. And then he says about Carl Jung, and again, it's like, yes, you learn about that shit in your first year. You know nothing about it. You know the name, and that's it. Saying that they all have massive complexes. It comes back to Manny again. Who does it? Craig, her supposed boyfriend, to see what she thinks. So Manny's on the spot here by her boyfriend, who should have seen, who is currently not on drugs, I believe. Who should see that she's out of her depth.
I mean, the implication for his addiction is that he's always on drugs, because that's how it works.
Yeah, well, that's true, too.
Yeah.
Awesome. Good job, Craig. She says, she just quietly mousy says, like, someone told me that Woody Allen was a perfect on-screen neurotic. And, like, even for a university student, say that, it's like, yeah, I guess that's kind of like something, for sure. This is her. This is Manny, by the way. My cat's breath smells like cat food moment around the table. We see silence and smiles at the table, like, Ellie says that she doesn't have any neuroses. So Ellie basically hasn't seen any of Degrassi or the past episodes.
Yeah, she has no neuroses. She's not a cutter.
No, it's not fine at all.
Yeah, she doesn't have any issues.
All good.
None. No abandonment issues, nothing. She's perfectly fine.
No. Yeah, her mother, Don Rickles. She forgot that. But that's a surprise to Manny, as she figured she'd be messed up due to being constantly rejected by guys. And we have silence at the table. Craig's eyes bug out.
I was the roller coaster of my emotions right before this line was at rock bottom. And like, I don't know how fast the roller coaster could get to the top, but like when Manny said this line, I audibly cheered, I stood up, I applauded, I hugged my television. I was so happy when Manny did this.
That Craig like, sorry reaction for punching shot,
you earlier.
I have tweeted that Craig reaction shot so many times with his eyes bugging out, because it's one of the best faces ever made on this show.
Yeah. Excellent. Yeah, I was fucking elated.
Ellie says that she takes her time to find guys that actually like her. And Dylan goes, oh, dear, and gets a big old gulp of wine.
Another perfect moment.
Yeah.
Then he should have just cheers and said, oh, here we go. Yeah. This is what we came for.
Well, again, like, oh,
here we go.
Girls being catty with each other. Here we go.
Party time.
Don't get in their way.
If I was Uncle Jesse, I would just be like, why am I dating a child?
Right.
Yes.
Exactly.
I should go home to my wife and kids. We're just separated. We're just working things out. We're just taking some time apart. Sorry, I told you we're divorced. We're actually like, we still talk to each other every day. Like,
I mean, or
you know, I think she's the one.
Yeah, or he can find another member of his staff to fuck if he wants to do that too, right?
Yes.
Or that. A transfer student or something. Yeah. A transfer like freshman that couldn't take 2 months at Banting and decided to go there.
Yeah, I'll take whoever. I'm a horn dog. Good job, Uncle Jesse. So then, heavy darts. Ellie then fires out the, having her nude, the pictures of her breasts shown all around the school.
Yeah.
And it's like,
sprinkling.
Without her consent, by the way, like something that was basically like,
sprinkle in a side of slut shaming and remind us all the writers have to make sure to tell us Manny fucked up in that situation.
But it wasn't Peter.
There was no Peter.
Manny. She's her bad fault.
Yeah.
Because if she didn't want those pictures out of there, she shouldn't have taken them.
Yeah.
I always love that that old gem that people throw out.
I know like, but it's like the show completely forgot who Ellie is as a character.
Yeah.
Like, she wouldn't, is not the type that would, or at least we were led to believe, would not be the type that would get into this catty bullshit. But
it's because of Craig.
Dudes, love.
It's fucking Craig.
Yeah.
It's all Craig's fault.
Like, boys.
It's Craig's fault.
Rock stars.
Don't forget, everybody, that Craig has an enormous cock. We established this a couple of seasons ago. It's powerful, more powerful than cocaine. Yeah. Like,
boom.
Makes the ladies crazy.
The sound effect.
Yeah.
I forgot the bass sound effect.
Boing. Boing. Yeah.
That's true. Like, if we've learned there's one thing that makes women go crazy.
Exactly. Craig's cock.
Especially if there's a crazy old drug addict attached to it.
Yeah.
Great. So Manny leaves the table, storms away. Like, that's the seventh time for somebody. And Craig gives chase. Jesse has a big smile and then gets another poor one. He's like, oh, cats be catting. He didn't say that, but he basically looks like that. We're up in the room, and Manny says, did you hear what she said? And Craig very helpfully says, yeah, but you started it.
What?
Thanks, boyfriend.
What?
Now, we'll go back. Let's go back for a moment. Can you review, Alan, what you just said to remind us to remember?
2 minutes ago, minutes ago, Ellie was the one specifically needling Manny about not knowing shit about what they were talking about. Ellie started it.
Yes.
And fucking Craig, and again, it's not as much that Craig says the words, it's that Manny doesn't react to it, is just like, how do I say this? It's not Craig that's trying to tell Manny that she started it. It's the writers trying to remind the viewers that she started it, which is gaslighting. It's not true. The writers are gaslighting the fucking audience.
Yeah. Yes. They're changing.
And again, the original writers of this show.
Yes. And that's for all these lines throughout this fucking episode. And like when they fuck these things up with the points that they're trying to make, it's not the anger about what the character is saying to the character, it's the writers telling the audience. So we're supposed to believe that, oh yeah, Manny, when she made that mean comment, and it's like, have you not watched the last 20 minutes of the episode where Ellie's been nothing but a fucking bitch to Manny the whole time?
Nonstop.
I mean, Manny is a slut though, so you know,
Arlo brings up a good point. To man, you're about even.
Samesies.
In your arguments.
She did show her boobs on the internet.
She did, you know.
Yeah, purposely. Remember?
Yeah. Yep, I do. Or do I? I'm being gaslit by this whole show.
Oh, no!
So Manny says that Ellie is everything that she is not. And Craig, Craig sighs and says, keep believing it, Manny, because it's real attractive. You know why? Because the importance of this entire thing is that Manny maintains her level of attractiveness to Craig, rockstar.
Craig's like, your attitude makes my big cock go, come on, Manny.
Not like that. Like that. He's like, you know the slide whistle in Groove is in the Heart by D-Light? You know when it goes down? That's what I don't dig this. And he makes a bunch of other references. That was in the cutscenes. So Manny says that they won't let her in their little club, which, again, just started this episode, I think.
Well, also, with fucking Manny, she should be like, you, Craig, like, you are being an ass. You are cutting me out. You're part of this, yes, and you're not with me. Like, I feel like we're apart. Why would Manny give a fuck about Marco and Ellie and hanging out with all these douchebags? Like, she hasn't before, but now it's all of a sudden like, oh, they won't accept me. No, Manny. Like, or sorry, no writers.
Yes.
Right? Manny should be like, Craig, you're the fucking problem. But...
yeah.
No, that's not what her problem is. It's all of them won't accept me.
And all of it, as you said before, all of it's no sold. Craig. Craig is like as if he's making sense.
Yeah.
So he tells her that she is his girl and she should be herself. Thanks, Craigus. She says she needs to maybe needs a little boost. Oh, she says she maybe needs a little boost. And guess what? Dun-da-da-da, it's drug time.
She's like, I fucking LOL'd this so hard because they go through all this shit. And then at the end, man, he's like, let's just do coke. Fuck it. And then they do coke. Like, great.
Let's do it. And they do.
I mean, she only knows what Craig has told her about it, which is that when he does it, he gets a confidence boost. So she's looking for a confidence boost.
She's looking for confidence, right?
But yeah, also what she's... but she's looking for a little bit more because she says she needs it so she can talk with his smart friends. So she's going to get smart, too, with cocaine, well, which is a great idea.
What I love is that if you watch this episode as a two-parter, you know, the lesson at the end of the second part is going to be, oh, cocaine is actually bad, right? But this episode's about to end. If you didn't watch the end of it, you'd be like, holy fuck, like, cocaine is amazing.
Can't wait.
When I teach substance use and abuse for health class, and we talk about some of the side effects and stuff of drugs, I don't remember, and maybe I've missed it, that one of the side effects of cocaine is intellect, but maybe I'll take a closer look this year.
They go back to the dinner party, and it's like, it's like almost like snap the fingers and they're at the dinner party and I'm like, this is my jam. Like, not the coke part.
Oh yeah.
But these two just fucking around, being assholes, spilling
shit. It's like a circus.
Yeah, not giving a fuck about anything. And all the snooty people, their night is ruined, and I fucking love it. I love it.
I noted the dinner is ruined.
Dinner party.
That Jake Epstein does a pretty good job in these two episodes of actually acting like he's on cocaine.
Seems like he's tweaking.
Manny is a little bit over the top here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Like, she seems like she's
really drunk or on speed or something
like
that.
She looks like she's on speed.
Yeah, that's a little over the top. And, you know, the constant laughing at everything, like, that's not really a thing. But yeah, Jake Epstein actually does quite a good job just looking like he's like, there's just something a little off, you know? Mm-hmm. And so compliments to him.
I mean, honestly, he's one of the better actors on the show. I mean, you know, they gave him really heavy shit to do his first two episodes ever on the show. And he was what, like 15 in real life. So, you know, he's one of the better guys to do this storyline, and that's probably why they tasked him with it. Plus, I mean, obviously the whole musician angle and the bipolar angle, it would stand to reason that he could get addicted to drugs, but yeah, let's give him his flowers. He was really good.
Don't forget, Pat Mastrioni took him under his wing when he joined the show. So if you remember that, right. And what was it from the Degrassi story, whatever, the doc where they're talking to Jake Epstein, and you know, Pat Mastrioni's like, basically, I took him under my wing, and you could tell that Jake Epstein's like, yeah, dude. Like,
he's like laughing at
him. Yeah, yeah.
Sure you did, bud. Okay, so, the dinner's ruined. It's quite good. If they had monocles, they would have popped out. You know, you get the point. So we're at the schoolyard, and JT is mad at Liberty because everyone's so mad in this episode. Because she dismissed them, even though he was up in her face shouting at her. She calls him man-child, and then he rehashes stuff about the baby and they had, and that now he has a right to be happy, even though he believes that makes her so mad. He tells her to stop trying to make him miserable as she is, and Liberty storms off into the school.
Great.
The ninth fucking storm off. Jeez. Every exit.
You should have called this episode The Storm Off.
Yes.
Next morning at Ellie's apartment, Manny rushes down the stairs outdoors saying she's late, and Ellie talks to herself and says, she was so much less chatty than you were last night. It's like, so Ellie's even being like a tool bag, like in her own presence.
Well, not only that. So Ellie makes the comment to her, and at the moment, I'm like, okay, like she must have known the scoop and is being sarcastic. Like, oh, you know, but we're going to see it right away. Ellie had no idea that those two were high as fuck. Like,
also, why is she only bringing two cups of coffee upstairs when she knows Manny slept over?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, she wouldn't give Manny coffee. Fuck that. Manny showed her tits. But yeah, like
she doesn't deserve coffee.
And so like there wasn't any conversation. Like with all the smarty pants sitting at the table, none of them afterwards were like, you know, weird how Craig and Manny went upstairs and then came down and were completely different. Like,
nobody knows.
We know the two older dudes. They 100% knew what was going on.
Oh, yeah.
They didn't give a shit.
Jesse does. We'll see that in the next episode when he's all of a sudden the fucking smartest guy in Degrassi. It's great.
Because he's 33 and has kids.
Yeah.
Yes. Jesse's like, man, I remember Green Day at Woodstock 94. It was wild. I was doing all the drugs. And they're like, what? So we are upstairs and Ellie delivers a Craig coffee, and he's really
to point out that Manny can just stay out all night with her fucking rock star boyfriend. She's just and that in her high rocks, school
and her rock star boyfriend has his own room in this giant house that Ellie, Marco, and Dylan live in. Remember we joked about how big the house was a couple of episodes ago?
But yeah, you know, there's no consequence or anything. Like, Snake and Spike are just like,
it's part of the Emma contract. Stay out all night. Just you talk to our daughter and we'll fucking
She's
not say anything.
It. She gets one night out every
we'll
couple
look the
weeks.
The other way. All right. Fair enough.
She's like a live-in nanny.
Yes.
So she sees the drugs by the door and asks what the drugs are. And oh my God, she's increasingly stupid. Like, it exponentially gets really stupid in this last minute of the show. So she examines a little baggie of white powder and asks, what is this? What's going on? So Ellie is not smart anymore. That
the
spell
Craig,
has worn off.
Like, put your drugs away. What the fuck is
wrong
with you?
And he leaves them out
Hide
all night. Like,
yo drugs.
Yeah, like they're right by the door. Yeah. Anyone can open the door up and look.
Not
and
the rock star
like,
lifestyle.
Literally right there.
He's a rock star. Living by, living on the edge.
So Craig says he didn't think it would get so bad so fast. And she asks if it's coke. And he says, it's Manny's. Manny's doing it. And I'm
it's
like,
Manny's
okay.
Coke. And Ellie's
now
like,
I'm back
yes,
in.
This makes My perfect sense.
Total sense.
Not the Vancouver rock stars coke. It is the high school students.
With bipolar issues.
He just admitted it.
Substance abuse.
He just
My
admitted
final
it.
My note is, Craig is the fucking worst in all caps.
He literally just admitted it to her. She's like, what is this? So first of all, she picks up, it's cocaine. She goes, what is this?
Yes, and she looks back at the bag and goes, what is this? Like, Ellie, did you just forget where you are? What you just said?
And Craig's line to her is, I didn't know it would happen so fast, which is to me an admission that like that you have done something bad. And so then she's like, wait, are you doing coke? Even though he just admitted it. And then he says, no, it's Manny's. And Ellie believes it because people on this show are stupid.
With two O's.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how would you write it like this? If he's going to lie, he would have just right away been like, it's fucking Manny's. He wouldn't have said all this other shit.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
He literally said, like, I have an addiction problem. Also, it's Manny's. It's not mine. It's like, what?
Yeah.
Like, it shouldn't have just said to be continued. It should have just went Ellie going, what?
Also,
and
like,
then an ending.
And
fade
like,
to black.
Maybe we've all forgotten this. I mean, the writers certainly have. Ellie's mother is an alcoholic.
Yes.
So she
Why
would.
She left the house.
She would spot this fucking shit from a mile away.
Oh, absolutely.
It's the whole she's blinded
Love
by Craig
blind.
And how much she loves him. Yes.
And his giant
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, her mother too. Does not have Craig's fucking Wang, so...
She's dong blind.
Wang crazy.
Dong blind is amazing.
Like, I know these kids kids were young-ish when these episodes aired. Let's see. 2007. Okay, Stacey Farber was almost 20 by the time they shot these episodes. But I can't even imagine, like, them sitting in the table read and reading these lines out loud and being like, Jesus Christ, they're making me do this? Like, how are they making me do this? Like, I can understand at 14, you don't want to say anything, but by the time I'm almost 20, I'd be like, are you sure you want me to say this? Yeah. Like, are you sure you want my character to really be this bad? Like, Jesus Christ.
Or like,
you mean she have an issue with saying smelly McSnooty pants at 20?
Yeah.
You crazy.
Oh, well, no. Well, no. How old was Cassie at this point? Cassie was only, she was born in 89. So by the time that episode aired, she wasn't quite that old yet. But I would understand if they made Stacey Farber say that stupid line. But, you know, they also had Cassie saying cuckoo bananas in every fucking episode.
Hooray. Yeah.
I'm sure if they're at the table, too, they could be like, look, like, we get that you want to get from point A to point B. Can we just not do a better way of getting there?
Right.
Like, this conversation doesn't make sense. Can we just do it this way? But, yeah, you're right. All power to the writers.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Big blizzard of cocaine that they wrote. They're like, thanks, CBC.
Oh, this is great.
Manny did it. Okay, and she believes it. Yeah, of course she does. Okay, let's go. Have you guys read Vruce? Rouse, whatever. It's like
Rouse. Rouso.
Rouso. Oh. And we have a to be continued of this beaut of an episode.
Like, stay tuned for more. You're only halfway through.
You're only halfway there. Yeah. Buckle in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're this far. You might as well stay. So yeah, so we've had we've had a roller coaster of emotions this evening for this one. We've had the highest highs to the lowest lows. I guess that's what the writers were trying to show us, the effect of drugs on our brains.
Yeah, it's the effect of cocaine on our brains. We're really high and then we crash.
And we hope you've had a similar effect on you all. So let's zip around. Let's go to BZ, you know what that stands for in SK. Who is over there?
Oh, bone. What did you call it? Bone city.
Zone.
BZ in the okay, Saskatchewan. BZ, bone zone it. In Saskatchewan.
All right, it's Arlo. You can follow me on Instagram at ARLOESCOTT. And to Toronto.
Hi, Alan. Slip with five eyes or slip. And if you want to follow us on Instagram at Narbos and Broomheads Podcast, or email us narbosandbroomheads@gmail.com, particularly if you were a mascot and had a costume, but please make it a legitimate mascot and not some fucking weird sex thing. Thank you. 0-2 Oakville.
And I'm at FollyT on Instagram, and I'm about to write a little proposal to see if I can get an ice cream stand built in my school, because apparently that's all I have to do is ask at school.
I mean, you are a teacher, so you should be able to do anything.
You got to go to the student council. Yeah.
I'm going to see if I can get an ice cream stand built.
Do it.
Because, you know, dessert. And our special host guest, returning guest in New York.
Stacy in New York. You can follow me on Instagram at srgots. You can follow me on TikTok on srgots. And I guess you can follow me on that other place, Twitter, at StaceGots.
And I've been Ted at SayWow3 on the Instagram machine. We've had a slice. Hope you've had one as well. And some goofballs and riles and cocaine or whatever you enjoy doing in your spare time. All right. We'll see you next time on the Narbos and Broomheads show.
Peace.
Later.
Bye.
Baby,
I just said I don't get my ups. I wouldn't do my homework. I would stay up late and dream about Kylan. I would never get girls out of my house.
Maybe I would.
I would walk around the gas station just to get the car my dreams. Everyone thinks I'm so good. Red lady, head to school. Yeah, oh.